Welcome to the quarterly EN call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. You may also enter questions at any time throughout the webinar by using the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robert Fast. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for calling in, and welcome to the quarterly all-EN call. We're glad you could take time to join us this afternoon. We have, as always, a lot of good information to share with you, and as tradition has it, I want to welcome new ENs that are new to the program, that are on the call, and any of you who are calling in for the first time, welcome to the call. There's a little bit of news that I would like to share for you up front, and that is in regards to some leadership appointments. The SSA has a new deputy commissioner who has been sworn in. This occurred in October last month. The new deputy commissioner is David Black. He will serve as Deputy Commissioner of Social Security for a term that will expire on January 19th, 2025. Mr. Black will also serve as the Secretary to the Social Security Board of Trustees. And just by a brief background update for David Black, he has previously served for almost a decade as general counsel for Social Security. He also worked with the U.S. Department of Education as the Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Office for Civil Rights. And Mr. Black is a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve, where he has served for nearly 30 years as an officer and has been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. So in addition to Commissioner Saul, David Black will serve as the Deputy Commissioner for SSA moving forward. We have some updates in terms of in-house business that we can share with you, and that is pertaining to sort of the EN payments policy oversight piece and how we have aligned this organizationally. So the good news is there's nothing new in terms of payments policy that we're announcing, but what we are announcing is essentially how this is structured organizationally moving forward and who will lead the payments policy discussions. So moving forward, this will be aligned under our current VR, Vocational Rehabilitation Team Leader, Janelle Bratcher, and Janelle will handle all things EN and VR payments related. So what we're doing is we're adding the payments policy portfolio under Janelle, who already has VR payments, and this will be essentially a payments policy portfolio housed on one team under one manager. What this means for you is this process should be transparent. You should not feel any impact whatsoever. But what we're looking to do is consolidate the portfolio into one area. The resources organizationally that have the payments policy expertise will be readily available to Janelle. Janelle's role really is to give us guidance and sort of coordinate the discussions and facilitate and identify the issues that are policy related and work with all of us to discuss or develop any new payments policies that we will share. And they sort of tend to happen ad hoc when we identify things programmatically, but like I said, for now, for all of you, this should be a seamless process, but we wanted to give you that update. I want to transition to the EN Summit Report. So I think a couple of months ago we talked about this, and I would have expected at that time for this report to have been made public, but we are a little bit cautious in terms of understanding that this document is going out for the world to see. and we want it to be right, and this is going through its due diligence as far as the various executive reviews. It's been reviewed by myself and the team several times, but now it's getting another set of eyes. We don't have a time frame for the release of that, but I am still going to be optimistic and predict a early 2020 release. Fingers crossed. And by the next call, which will be
in February.
Okay. In the middle of the winter, I'll have some information. Hopefully it'll be shared by then, and then I can actually talk a little bit about it. But it's going to be really interesting from the perspective of the topics covered, the concerns raised during the summit, things that we are going to identify as action items for us to try to address in the short term, and somewhat in the longer term. They might be more complicated, but we're going to share all that with you. And in addition, concurrently, we are working on a comprehensive plan, which is going to be a far more thorough report. And really the focus with that is on having resources identified in the document which may be helpful for your organizations to refer to or to access online and so forth, but really a more in-depth sharing of the conversations that occurred and the various activities that were recommended for us to make the program better. So both documents are in the works. Summit report is further along. The comprehensive is in the queue. It's in a sort of a second level review process right now, but they will both be made public, and we will communicate to you by various channels that they're available, and we'll share them with you. So more to come on that, so I just wanted to give you an update on that. We have some data that we wanted to share, and we think it's helpful to share some programmatic data from time to time. And when I am asked to speak at various venues, I like to give stakeholders an update on what's going on, what are some of the trends we see programmatically in our data. And I think it's an area that we've gotten a lot better at sort of refining the various data reporting and sharing and disseminating the information. So this is really an effort to continue along that path and sort of give you an idea of what's going on programmatically. What you should see in front of you is a slide on basically summarizing EN productivity. And really the trend is looking from September 2015 through the end of September 2019. And a couple things I'll highlight for you without getting into the weeds here. But as you can see, the number of employment networks overall is trending downward. We're about 17%. Fewer ENs than we had in 2015. And at one time in this program, there was a tremendous amount of energy geared around recruitment of ENs. We had as many as well over 1,000 ENs at one time. But the one thing I think that we've identified is it's more about quality than quantity. And our focus over the last few years has been developing program integrity initiatives designed to enhance EN performance. One of those things that I'll cite to you readily is the site reviews. But we are continuing to refine those activities. And I think as a result, we're seeing, you know, those organizations that are in the program that are not active, they might have an agreement, but they're not assigning tickets for whatever reason. We're trying to help them get better. But if they also decide, you know, that this might not be a good fit for their organization, where, you know, those organizations are coming out of the program. So we see a decline in the number of ENs, but ironically, we are seeing a upward increase in the number of tickets assigned to ENs in the program. So whereas in September 2015, we're about 51,000. We're now right at the 70,000 ticket threshold. We've had a 35% increase in tickets assigned, despite the fact that we've got fewer ENs. So what this means is employment networks in 2015, the average employment network had about 80 tickets assigned. Today, they have about 131 tickets assigned. That's a 64% increase. So there's a pretty big bump there. The other thing is really when we took a look at what are ENs earning or what are we paying ENs, that's gone up significantly. And there's been some things that we've implemented over the years to create or streamline payments to employment networks. Most notably is ePay, which we implemented in 2016. So we've seen in total dollar amount go up from $46 million to, as of the end of September 2019, $84 million, just about $85 million. 84% increase in the dollar amount that we're paying to employment networks. And you take that those amounts, and if you factor them or you average them by the total number of ENs, what we see here is a pretty interesting number, and that is the average EN in 2015 was generating about $72,000 in payments to their organization. That number, as of 2019, is $160,000 generated to, on average, per EN, and that's 122% increase in payment amount to each, on average, to employment networks. So if you've been in a program a while, you've probably seen an increase in revenue, and we are getting reports, ad hoc reports of ENs that are growing, that are hiring staff, that are moving into bigger facilities, and that's all good news. This program is a really valuable revenue resource for organizations. So I think this data helps sort of underscore that. Now, the final thing that I'll note is what we're seeing in terms of ticket use with VR. And really, this is, I would say, maybe more accurately characterized as disabled beneficiary participation with VR. And we've seen a decrease, pretty steady decrease, since over the last, I'd say, 18 months. If you look at 2015-2017 numbers, it's pretty steady. And it had been going back several years. It always hovered around that 250,000 threshold, but now we're down to 231. We've seen a steady and constant decrease in the number of beneficiaries being served by VR. That what we see there is about a 7% decrease over the 2015-2019 timeframe. And I've talked to VR about this, and what VR has, you know, we're trying to figure out what the reasons for this are, but one thing we think is a factor is WIOA. And WIOA is the Department of Labor set of regulations, Workforce Opportunity and Innovation Act, or it might be Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, one or the other. But it's a set of requirements for VRs to provide services. And one of those requirements is for VR to allocate a percentage of their services to youth. So, and youth being individuals who are not or who are actually younger than age 18, and therefore at the 18 birthday, they become eligible to be Ticket to Work customers. But if they're younger, they aren't, and so VR is in a position where they have to service more youth, then that kind of pushes their capacity to service adult beneficiaries or the adult beneficiary population. So there's a pool of, and we did talk about this during the summit, there's a pool of beneficiaries that are out there that are maybe on a waiting list for VR, but VR is either not going to be able to get to them right away or perhaps may never be able to get to them right away. So our challenge is taking a look at what our opportunities are to let that population know that they can get services from an employment network. So we are working on that, and that would be something you would see in one of the summer reports. So just wanted to summarize that. I probably talked way too much, but I hope this information is helpful. And the next thing I just want to talk about briefly is EN service shift and responsibilities, and that is we're working on a plan right now to transition some of the workload, the forward-facing contact workload, from what had been internal SSA Social Security staff over to TPM staff. We've had a significant amount of attrition within SSA, and we've had no ability to hire in at least the last 2 years. And we don't want this to adversely impact services that we're providing to employment networks. So we are working on a plan internally and in collaboration with our ticket program manager to transition some of that contact that you may make with us over towards TPM, just to make sure that we have sufficient staff to answer your questions, take your calls, your emails, et cetera. We're working on that. When we get that finalized, we will announce to you probably via a blast when this will fully take effect. Right now we're in a planning stage, and we're getting towards the completion of that planning stage. We're optimistic. A couple more hurdles to get through, but that's where we're heading with that right now. So a lot of information. Hope it was helpful. And right now I want to transition into our next speaker who will talk to us about some really what we think are great opportunities for your organization to become more familiar with our work incentives, perhaps some opportunities for work incentives, training, and certification. We need more ENs to be engaged and using work incentives as a tool. They are designed to be a tool to get individuals back to work. Our WIPA capacity is stagnant and limited, and there's tremendous demands on the WIPA program. And one opportunity is to expand the knowledge base and training among our employment networks. And we're hopeful that you will listen very closely to this next session, which will give you all the information you will need to learn about this opportunity. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Susan O'Mara, who's the director of WIPA National Training and Data Center, and is a great colleague of ours. So Susan, if you would, please take it away.
Okay, thank you very much, Rob. And hi, everyone. It's really great to join you on your quarterly call this afternoon. I know I spoke with many of you about a year ago when we did a call like this to talk about these opportunities, but it's always good to revisit this. We have seen an increase in the number of EN staff participating in training over this year related to the work incentives. I believe most of you on the call are aware, based on that call last year, as well as just our history of working with Social Security and with partners around the country, the VCU National Training and Data Center, NTDC, delivers training and technical support to the WIPA projects, and that's Work Incentive Planning and Assistance Projects, for those of you who may be new ENs and not familiar. In addition to providing the training and support to the WIPA projects, we also, as a center, provide training and certification opportunities for community partners. If you can take a look at slide 4, and on this slide, we provide some information on two very specific training opportunities that are available for EN staff. The first of these is the CWIC and Community Partner Work Incentive Counseling Initial Training and Certification. It's a very long name. And basically, this is kind of the core of our work. This is a very intensive year-long training and certification process, and this process is required for the WIPA CWICs before they're they have to be certified, provisionally certified, before they're able to start serving beneficiaries. But it's also been made available to community partners for a number of years at this point, and it's really targeted towards those community partners who will be delivering individualized and intensive work incentive counseling services, a regular part of their job. So it's this training, like I said, it's very intensive, and it involves participating in a 5-day on-site training class, a classroom training, and also completing a 2-part certification process that begins immediately after the training class. ENs, or employment networks, are considered to be part of the community partner group. When you register for initial training classes, you'll see that you can select community partners, and you'll have an option to identify yourself as employment network staff, which is really important to do, because as being an employment network, among all community partners, you have the highest priority for available space. So while we always accommodate WIPA staff registering for the training first, once the WIPA staff are accommodated, the EN staff are the next on the list to be considered for space in the trainings. So we have some detailed information on our NTDC website on the initial training and certification process, and we've included some links to those website pages on the slide here. What you'll be able to find there is a calendar of our training classes, including the locations. We move the initial trainings around the country to make them more accessible for people. And we also provide some information on the registration process and the periods of registration for each class. Right now, we have the Orlando initial training class happening this week, but there are an additional 8 initial training classes that we have scheduled between January and July 2020. Registration is currently open for 2 of those classes. It's open for the January training in Portland, Oregon, as well as for the February training in Nashville, Tennessee. So we encourage you, if you're considering these trainings, to go ahead and get registered for those. But this brings me to a really important reminder about a somewhat new requirement for participating in the initial training. And this is a requirement for all community partners, including ENs. And to be able to register for the initial training class, you will need to complete the Introduction to Social Security, Disability Benefits, Work Incentives, and Employment Support Programs web course, another long name. We refer to it commonly as the introductory web course. And so this is, a relatively new requirement, past several months, and it'll be ongoing requirement for community partners, including employment networks. And so what happens is, if you go in right now and you haven't completed the introductory web course, if you go to register for an initial training, you won't be able to move forward. It'll immediately check that you've completed that course. So it's absolutely essential to complete that course first to be able to register for the initial training class. And the introductory web course is a 2-week course. It's online. It provides a basic introduction to the Social Security Disability Benefit Programs and work incentives, as well as an overview of the WIPA project and work incentive counseling services. The course is structured around 6 different lessons, and each of these lessons has a kind of a video lecture component to it, as well as supplemental readings and resources. We do have a VCU instructor. It's an instructor-led session. But most of it is very self-paced and self-directed. We do have a discussion board for posting questions and sharing information, and it's always possible to reach the instructor for the course if you'd like to talk to us directly or have questions beyond what you want to post on the discussion board. There are 4 introductory web course classes that are scheduled for the January to March 2020 time period, so the first quarter of the new year. And registration is open for all of these classes right now, which is a new thing. We're trying to open them all quickly. As soon as we have dates assigned for them, we're going to go ahead and open registration. And we're going to leave them open for a longer period of time so that people have a chance to register kind of up to the last couple weeks, before the class. So if you or your staff are intending to register for an initial training class, in the coming year, in 2020, we do recommend that you take a look now at one of these available sessions and go ahead and register. And as you're doing this, of course, be sure to select one of the courses that's going to take place and be completed prior to the initial training class you want to attend. We have provided a link here on the slide to the introductory web course registration page, and we have some narrative information there on the course, some additional information. And you can always reach out to us. Julie Shaw is our wonderful administrative director on our contract. She kind of runs the show for us, and we have her contact information. You're always available to reach out to Julie, as well as Lee Jones is another person listed for additional assistance on that. Now, and do note that we do not have, unlike the initial training where we have a maximum of 30 participants in the class, there is no limit to the number of participants we can approve and have attend an introductory web course. So all of, you know, all individuals who register will be accepted. There's no need to apply for multiple classes if you have concern about not getting in. That's really not a concern. Just pick the one that is most suited to you, and you know, you're able to make sure you complete that before the initial training class you want to attend. Once you do register, you'll receive immediately after that a confirmation email, and then closer to the period of the class starting, you'll receive additional information on how to log into the class and a welcome and those types of things. I do want to also point out that the introductory web course, while it is a requirement for EN staff who want to go to the initial training to become a certified work incentive counselor, it's also available to any other staff you have who might be not be looking to become, you know, an intensive or individualized work incentive counselor, provide those services. But, you know, they're providing other types of employment support services to individuals who have their ticket assigned to your program. This course is also, the introductory web course is also very beneficial for these individuals. And we encourage you to consider that as well. So those were the main pieces I wanted to share. Adele, if you want to open it up to questions at this point. Hello?
Hi, Susan. Sorry about that.
No problem. Hi.
Still technical difficulties. Okay, so we definitely appreciate all the information. This is Adele, and I'll ask at this point that we'll just take a little break just to see if there's any questions just for Susan's portion, and then we'll go ahead and take those calls, just those questions regarding this topic, and remember that at the end we'll open up for other topics. Sandy, if you can help us with that, please.
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We take the first question from Callie Sandell at Able, South Carolina.
Hi there. Good afternoon. So I am relatively new to Ticket to Work, less than 2 years. Able South Carolina, we do provide WIPA services. We have CWICs that work here. Mm-hmm. To date, it's been my understanding that, like, we have to kind of keep them separate, that even though I have a strong interest in CWIC services and WIPA services, that because I administer our Ticket to Work program, that we can't cross those two over. Is that correct?
Yes, there is a requirement for a firewall in your WIPA terms and conditions. And you know, I'm going to ask that if there are others on the line from the TPM who might want to address that from y'all's perspective about any requirements for keeping the program separate. I do know that we have many WIPAs that are also ticket providers, and as well as many other WIPA programs that have other staff who are trained to be work incentive counselors and are community partner work incentive counselors. So, you know, certainly feasible to have additional staff who are providing that. But if you know, in terms of how it's funded through the ticket program, I think I'm not the best person to address that. Adele, is there somebody that you would like to have address that?
Susan, this is Kara. You're correct. So we do have several organizations that are both WIPAs and ENs, but there must be a firewall between the staffs. And it's not a requirement from the EN side of things. It's in the terms and conditions for the WIPA.
Okay. That's what I thought, and that's what I believe to be true, but especially, you know, on this call, I just wanted to double-check my understanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. The next question is from Hazel Bowman at Anister Center.
Yes, I'm Hazel Bowman, and I'm also relatively new within the last 2 years to the Ticket to Work program. What I wanted to know, if someone wanted to review some of the introductory material, is that possible to redo that?
You mean in place of attending the course or just as an aside?
I'm saying attending the course over, you know, redoing the course again. Is it possible to give a refresher?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely possible. And again, we don't have any limits on the numbers, so that, yeah, that's perfect. In fact, that's a great idea.
Okay, and then another question. When someone is having some real portal issues and not able to get those issues resolved through using the user guide or the helpline, what are the other options available?
And okay, and I might need a bit more clarification on the
information.
Question.
Yes. Okay, at this point I'm having some issues getting into the portal, and
okay.
The bottom line is I can't enter the portal because I'm not using it, and I'm not using it because I can't get in. And that's been going on for a series of weeks.
Hi,
and going
this is Adele Hazel. I'll interrupt you for a second.
Yes.
Pardon me. This Susan is here as a guest to speak on this one particular topic. We do have
someone
online, and we can bring that back at the end when we open up for Q&A. But we do appreciate you chiming in on that.
All right. Thanks. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right.
Don't
worry.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
There are no further questions on the phone lines at this time.
All right. Thank you. Certainly appreciate that. Again, thanks again, Susan, for helping us out with that.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Adele. We have just 2 quick questions from the chat for Susan.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, John.
Absolutely. So our first question comes from Linda, who just wants to know if there's going to be any training options that are going to be closer to the Midwest.
We do have a course where – hold on just a second. I'm going to pull up the classes for you. We have a number of classes, as I mentioned, scheduled to take place. Right now, this week, we have the class taking place in Orlando. I mentioned the Portland training in January and then Nashville and Tennessee, but we also have a training in Dallas in March as well as Phoenix. And then that'll be followed by Baltimore, Salt Lake City, Alexandria, Virginia, and Minneapolis. So, hopefully one of those will be a little bit closer to you.
All right. And I'm just going to go ahead and repost that training calendar link there so Linda also has access to that as well.
Thank you very much.
And then our next question is going to come from John Bertram, who wanted to know if it was possible to do, it sounds like the entire course, if you had a virtual offering for everything.
A virtual offering for the initial training class and certification process? No, we do not. That's not a part of our contract at this point in time. It is strictly a face-to-face training for the 5-day course at this point in time.
All right. Thank you very much. That's the only questions we had remaining from the chat.
Thanks, John. I appreciate you. And, again, thanks a lot, Susan. What I'll do now is we'll go back to the agenda, and I'll turn this over to Tara Kaplan.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just have a couple reminders. The APOR and the 222, which is the Security Awareness Form, are both coming out the end of January. I want to remind everybody to do it timely. Every year we have to send many reminders. We terminate many ENs for not doing it every year, and it would be a shame to have to terminate your EN because you chose not to fill out a form. It is in the terms and conditions in your TPA. This year, we were able to, on site visits, we were lucky enough last year to have a budget throughout the year, and we actually were able to visit 61 ENs for a total of 28 trips. We also visited 7 WIPAs and PABs as well. Most trips were between 2 and 3 ENs per trip, and we were able to go to 18 states this year. So we accomplished a lot. And, you know, while we're on the trips, you know, the type of things that we're seeing for ENs, we're seeing a lot of good things, people doing a lot of great work, but we're also seeing a lot of non-compliant documentation. People are not maintaining contact with their ticket holders. When we go there, we're meeting with staff who are not suitable to work with ticket holders. Also, we are seeing a lot of change in personnel when we go there. So please ensure that, you know, when you have new staff, that you alert us immediately. You put everybody who is working with the ticket holders through suitability. And just keep up with your documentation and your ticket holders. We do appreciate that. Recently, we've become aware that there's ENs who are using the cloud to store. And we're trying to get a hold on, you know, what you guys are doing and how we need to go about managing that process. We did send a blast out last week asking all ENs who are using this cloud to respond to us and what you're doing. And there were several things in that blast. If you have not yet responded, we'd appreciate if you could respond by the end of the week. Timely progress reviews started November 18th. Please make sure your beneficiary, your ticket holders, rather, understand the timely progress process, because if they're not making timely progress, they're in jeopardy of losing their medical CDR protection. And that is it. I will hand it over to you, John.
Hello, everyone. So I believe the last call we actually reviewed some updates to Find Help, and we actually have some more updates as well, which I'll review, and I think these are pretty exciting. I'm sure you will all agree. So first off, one of the things we've done is we've added 3 new services to the search form. So resume writing, as well as transportation services and wage reporting assistance, are all available for beneficiaries or any user using the Find Help tool to search and filter ENs by. These 3 services are services that are reported in the APOR. So once a year when you guys submit your APOR, if you check those services, then your Find Help directory will be updated in order to have your listing show that you provide those services. One of the larger features that we added this time around is pinning providers. So the new provider cards that we have added now have a little pin in the top right-hand corner. And if you click that pin, it will pin your provider to the top of the page. So this means that as you navigate from page to page and you have a provider pinned, they will stay there. So you can save a provider that you're interested in and navigate through pages while maintaining that pinned provider up there. You can pin up to 3 providers. There's, as you can see on this screen, there's a display that tells you how many providers you have pinned as well as how many providers you have remaining to pin. And here we see that we've got 2 providers pinned. And once you have 2 providers pinned, you'll notice that the compare service providers button will turn from like a light blue inactive mode to enabled, and you'll be able to click that compare service providers button. So and you can also collapse and expand the providers that are pinned. So when you click that compare service provider button, it'll pop up with a new window where you can see side by side a comparison. So you can pin up to three providers, and therefore you can compare up to three providers. In this example right here, we've got two sample ENs compared. So you'll be able to see what region they serve. You'll be able to see how they provide services. And I don't believe we have a screenshot here, but if you go to the website and you compare ENs and you scroll down, you'll see that it has the list of services that they provide side by side. So this is an exciting feature that will allow ENs to be able to directly compare two providers. I do see we have a couple questions coming in the chat that I'll go ahead and answer. Someone wanted me to just go back real quick and discuss those three new filters. So once again, that was resume writing, transportation services, and wage reporting assistance. And this information is on choosework.ssa.gov/findhelp. And so I know it's been a little while since we've discussed the FindHelp tool, so I just wanted to remind everyone where this information comes from, as well as how we can update the information. So the information for FindHelp comes from the information that you initially supply in your ticket program agreement, as well as the information that you provide each year for the annual performance outcome report, or APOR. Additionally, there is ticket assignment data, the number of tickets that you currently have assigned, which just comes from the Social Security ticket assignment data database. And then finally, any updates that you provide to the Employment Network Service Team, so ENST, any of those updates are also going to be able to be populated here. So as a reminder, if you have changes to your points of contact, to addresses, to contact information, to your website URL, or the services you offer, please do send an email to emservice@ssa.gov. Once again, if you have changes to your points of contact or anything like that, you should be filling out that TPA change form. In a few minutes, I'll go ahead and link a link to that TPA change form. And then finally, there's that marketing tool that you may notice in the FindHelp where it's the brief little paragraph description that you can use to freely describe your organization. That marketing description is actually a separate email, which I'll post in the chat in a moment. And that's going to be endescrev@ssa.gov. And once again, I'll post that in the chat. So just a quick reminder, additionally, when you're doing EN descriptions, if you're submitting one of those, there are a couple of requirements. One, it's a limit of 250 characters. And then we do want you to use factual statements and phrases instead of platitudes. So, for example, I've been in Employment Network since 2006. Instead of saying something like I was the largest employment network in the nation or something like that you can't actually prove. Don't make comparisons to other ENs and don't make statements about services that aren't available under the ticket program. So any services you're describing in your EN description should be limited to those things that you're providing directly under the ticket program. And then finally, don't use any jingles, slang, or unconventional language. And I'll pass it over to Anna to discuss Service Provider Foundation while I answer some of those questions in the chat and fill in the emails for everyone.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, everybody. I just want to remind everybody that since August 2019, we have been using a new learning management system to provide the modules and the training curriculum to new staff at existing ENs or new ENs that come in on board in the program. So this system is helping us have a better tracking of the attendance and the knowledge, having knowledge checks for each staff member. It's a combination of self-paced modules and a Q&A with one of the EN development consultants on the EN development team. We are tracking all this information, and it's a blend of 14 self-paced modules with assessments, and then we have those six Q&A sessions and intervals during all these modules. It is available to all new staff, so if you have new staff that has not received these modules or you are thinking about adding them to your employment network, once you send that contract change to EN service, we are notified, and then we start that training, of course. If for some reason you have not been in contact with us, please email enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov, and we will be happy to start that training with you. At the end of each curriculum, each attendee will receive a certificate of completion and the activation to certificate holders after the completion of the course. I want to also touch on the curriculum that we have put in place for the last 2 years or so in the program. We have a specific trainings and a specific requirement that each point of contact needs to go through based on the role that they have at each particular EN, like the main program contact or the ticket holder point of contact or suitability of payments. So we put a very comprehensive training curriculum for them to ensure that they are performing well in the program and doing everything that is necessary. So just wanted to put it out there and just a reminder that we don't really cater to each EN and each services that they provide. We do this based on the program needs and in general how an EN should serve in the Ticket to Work program. We also posted these modules online in the website, yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. All the 13 modules are posted. The only exception is the one for the ticket portal that is not posted out there. These modules are for information only, for anybody that would like to refresh their knowledge on particular topics, they can go there. It's just viewing modules on the website that does not count towards the EN training requirements. So if you have a new staff that needs to go through this training, they're welcome to go there just to look at the information, I guess. But they are required to do everything through the LMS and go through the Q&A sessions in order to count for your EN to be in compliance. This training curriculum is part of the TPA. Every staff member and every new EN needs to complete it within 60 days of activation of that particular EN. Finally, we are still offering the ticket portal module that is not posted online. We are providing one-on-one sessions as needed, and we are also hosting one group session every month for those interested. So if anybody's interested in that particular module, they can email enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And that's all I have. And next, I'm going to have Pat Van Nelson.
Thanks, Anna. Hi, everyone. This is Pat Van Nelson, Director of Communications. And I talked to you back in August, and today I'd like to bring you up to date on some of the activities since our meeting then, and preview a little bit of what's coming. So on the next slide, this is John. There you go. Thanks. One of the things that we're really excited about is you might remember that we told you that Social Security had initiated a social media campaign that involved Facebook advertising, and I'm really happy to report that this effort has exceeded even our most ambitious goals. The whole point was we wanted to increase both the reach, that's the number of people who see what we put up on our posts, and the engagement, the number of people who comment on it, who like it, who share it, who follow the Facebook page. So on this slide, there's some of the more dramatic results. Since August, we added nearly 23,000 likes. In October, we received more than 2,000 comments and 500 shares. Now, when we started this, our engagement rate was less than 1%. It was 0.57%. It's now up to 49.5%. Also, last month, we referred 21,000 visitors to the Choose to Work website. That resulted in 100,000 page views, the highest ever. So the bottom line is that in just a few months, like from August to October, we've doubled the number of Facebook followers of the previous 10 years, from 27,000 to 54,000. So basically, we found the audience, and they're indicating that they do want to hear from us. So, I mean, this is one of our very happy good news stories. So moving to the next slide, we talked back in August about that we were now able to share some of your social media and your website content on our social media platforms. As I noticed on the previous slide, we now have a growing following of 54,000. I think I told you 34,000 back in August. So your posts, you get even more visibility if you choose to do this. We follow some of you, but we don't know everybody's handles. So if you want us to share your information on the ticket program channels, just send your social media handles to us so we can like and follow your pages. You can send those to us at socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov. In addition, because we can now also accept specific requests for content you'd like us to share, but that does have to go through a review. So before we post it, we need a little advance notice of like a week or two before any events that you'd like to have publicized. And just a reminder, if you want to share something like a success story that you've written for one of your clients, make sure it doesn't include any PII. On the next slide, I want to talk a little bit about our progress in publishing. We've published some short articles and broadcast some radio spots about the program through a syndicated news release. Since August, we've published 4 new articles, and since beginning this effort earlier in the year, we've published 7 articles that have generated 28,000 print stories in newspapers around the country. That gives us a potential readership of more than 27 million people. Also, since August, we've broadcast 2 new radio spots, and that brings us to a total of 5 for the year, that have been broadcast almost 2,000 times with a potential audience of almost 200 million. If you're interested and you want to check out these articles, they're available at www.netsnet.com. Just select government news under article categories. The next item I'll bring you up to date on is about our feature stories. I think everybody on this call knows the impact that a story about a real person succeeding through the program can have on people who might be wondering if they can do it too. These stories are among our most popular features, but we can't produce them without you. We depend on you to refer successful beneficiaries to us, so please consider whether you have possible candidates to star in these features. We're also now writing a new series called Stepping Stones. Whereas success story candidates have to achieve a certain level of employment at which they're no longer receiving benefits, Stepping Stones articles look at people who aren't necessarily at that level, but they've achieved something, some milestone. Maybe they used a particular work incentive or achieved some non-monetary goal, like the college graduation, and they're on a path towards work. The intent is to recognize that the road's not always linear, and it's important to celebrate the milestones along the way. The first story we did was published in September. It's about a young man who, as a teenager, was paralyzed in a car accident. He then went on to get his MBA, and he's now training IRS's customer service representatives. So if you have a candidate, you can send them to stories@choosework.ssa.gov. The next item I want to talk about is our webinars. In December, we're having a webinar that's basically career preparation for college students with disabilities. It'll be held on Wednesday, December 18th from 3 to 4:30 Eastern Time. You might want to note the date as it's a week earlier than usual due to the holiday. The speakers will be Stephen Allen of PolicyWorks and Ray Sabula of Cornell University, and they'll present information about youth peer mentoring and career pathing for college students with disabilities, as well as information about the ticket program and other work incentives. You can register for the webinar at choosework.ssa.gov/WISE, and if you miss one, you can view it on WISE On Demand 2 weeks later after the event, also on the website. Finally, earlier this year, Social Security embarked on an effort to refresh the ticket program's brand, starting with a new logo. Some of you, along with some of our beneficiaries, participated in reviewing these concepts. Well, the logo has been approved, and what better time to roll it out than the 20th anniversary of the program? So on December 17th, the date the law was signed in 1999, our websites and many of our marketing materials will have a new look. On this page, there's just a few ways that you can consider using some of the social media platforms to stay in touch with the program. And, of course, don't forget to register for the WISE webinar. Adele, back to you.
Thank you so much, Pat, and thank you for everyone who's helped us with this call today. What we'll do now, Sandy, if you can help us with opening up the lines for any questions.
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. Pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Take the first question from Peter Mead at Career Connect.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here, and thank you for this great information session today. This regards specifically the email that went out asking Ian's questions about whether they were using cloud storage and how quickly could they migrate to secure servers. And the email left a lot of questions so that I really couldn't effectively answer your question. When you say cloud storage, specifically what do you mean? And even more importantly, when you say secure server, what do you mean? That's the question.
Rob, do you want to take that or do you want me to?
You can take the call of that particular question, Kara.
Okay. Well, and I'm not a tech person. Katie, jump in where you can. Different companies have cloud storage that you can buy, like Google does, Amazon does. And so there are ENs who have purchased outside storage for their data. We have some very large ENs with thousands of tickets. So I guess it's hard for them to store stuff just on their hard drive. And different ENs do things differently. So right now the agency is checking into cloud storage, if that's going to be allowable, how we can transition. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, so secure server, that's my biggest question. What is your requirement, what's your spec for a secure server? Is it possible to use secure cloud storage? For example, that would be secure cloud storage that that website has a secure socket layer cert on it, and B, two-factor authentication to access the information, similar to what the EN portal does. Would those two, if a cloud storage solution had those two features, would that be regarded as a secure server?
I cannot answer that. We have an Office of Information Security who answers those things. So it's on a one-by-one basis because everybody does it differently. And did you respond to the blast that went out last week?
Yes, I did with
okay.
My question.
So we will, for those who responded, we will get back to you. So we're just in the investigative stages right now, and we will get back to you on what would need to be done. As for right now, I would just conduct business as you are.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Karen. Thank you for all the years of great service in the ticket program.
Oh, thank you.
If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Next question comes from Barbara Valmont at Orange Grove Center.
Hi, Hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you for this very informative webinar that you all put together. I'm not sure. My question is in regards to payment, so I'm not sure if that's something that can be answered now. Or...
Hi, Barbara. Could you repeat the question for me to have a better understanding?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I can ask it now. We received a request that we needed to submit information on a ticket holder's FICA withholdings, but I was wondering if that's something new or was that something that was always required for them to have FICA withheld, because this particular ticket holder did not have any FICA withholding in her pay stub.
Okay, that helped. And I think I have some folks on the line that could probably help answer that particular question.
Is this person self-employed?
No, this person works for a company.
Okay, that has always been required in the program.
Okay. All right, so we're working on getting that information. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara.
There are no further questions at this time on the phone.
No further questions, so let's go to John and check on the chat.
All right, so our first question comes from Sharon, who asks, is there any movement on increasing the number of AJCs involved in Ticket to Work?
Okay, one more time, John.
Is there any movement on increasing the number of American Job Centers involved in Ticket to Work?
Oh. At this point, I'll ask if there's any of the SSA staff that can help us with that.
Good afternoon. This is Patrice. So the question was, is there any plan to include additional AJCs in Ticket to Work? Am I understanding the question correctly?
Yeah, if there's been any effort to increase the number of AJCs, yes.
Absolutely. I mean, we're always looking to increase the number of service organizations who serve in the Ticket to Work program. We at times try to look at different groups of organizations, but of course, AJCs are always welcome to apply. And at one point, we did have someone who was sort of helping us specifically with that effort. And we're also working with a few individuals from the Department of Labor. There is a task force that we work on with them to see what we can do to include additional AJCs. There aren't any current strategic plans that we're doing right now toward AJCs, but they're never excluded from participating in the program, of course.
All right. And our next question comes from Natalie, who asks, can you provide recommendations for marketing CPREX, benefit counseling services, in conjunction with SBR, Ticket to Work, and CPREX?
Can you read that just a little bit slower? It was a pretty long question. I want to make sure that we got it.
Absolutely. So can you provide any recommendations for marketing CPWEX and benefits counseling services? And then she adds, in conjunction with SBR, Ticket to Work, CPWEX.
This is Patrice. I honestly cannot... but that is a question we'll take back, and maybe we'll talk to a few of our WIPA service organizations to see if we can get some guidance for you. But I don't have an answer for that, to be honest.
Okay, perfect. So I'll go ahead and flag that question, and we'll try and get an answer to that in the recap. Our next question comes from Whitney Nelson, who asks, I took the classes and received the work incentive planning and utilization for benefit practitioner's certificate. Is it similar to the VCU CPWIC certification?
I'm not sure if we still have Susan on the line that could probably help us with that. That's more than likely a question we can forward and get that answered.
John, this is Kara. What was the question again?
So I'll read the title of this class again because it's a long title. It's Work Incentives, Planning and Utilization for Benefit Practitioners Certificate. And she just wants to know if it's similar to CPWIC.
Well, every organization uses a different title. CPWIC is VCU's title. Like Cornell uses a different one. But the bottom line is if we are going to say you are a certified benefits counselor that we approve, it has to be through one of our approved organizations. And currently there are only three approved organizations.
And because I'm sure this will come through the chat, what are those organizations?
What are they? It's Indiana University, Virginia Commonwealth University, and Cornell University.
All right. So those three organizations, if you have a benefits counseling certification through them, you'll appear on Find Help with that little benefits counselor badge.
And, John, it has to be one that's up to date.
Absolutely.
And we do check that. Like this year when we got the APOR back and you said you were a benefits counselor, we asked you to give us your certificate to prove so. And we only put those on there that have a proven credentials that are up to date.
Oh, right. And I think that answered both the original question and a couple questions that I'm sure were about ready to come in. Our next question comes from Linda, who asks, if an organization has a full WIPA contract, does that mean we can't obtain the CPWIC certification and implement that for services through Ticket to Work?
Do you mean that you are an organization that has both a WIPA grant and you're an EN? I would need to understand
yes.
The question.
Yeah, so it sounds like what Linda's asking is, because she's got a full WIPA contract, is it possible to have her EN staff obtain a CPWIC and
Absolutely.
Implement those services?
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so as long as you're just abiding by that firewall and making sure that the EN staff are separate from that WIPA contract.
Correct.
All right, and then the final question, we might have had a couple more come through, and I will read the chat and catch up on this, but Bradley just wanted to clarify something that you had mentioned earlier, Kara. So for the storing of information in a cloud database, he just wanted to confirm that it sounds like you're going through things on a case-by-case basis, and we'll get back to everyone at some other point in time.
Correct.
All right. So, Adele, did we have any – do you want to open up the line, see if we had any other questions on the phone queue while I catch up on the chat?
Of course. We'll check with Sandy. Any other questions in the queue?
Once again, press star 1 to ask a question. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off.
Thanks, Sandy. At the moment, I imagine there aren't any questions in the queue?
There are none in the queue at this time.
Okay. And while we give John a chance to catch up, just a reminder that this is the last call for this particular year, and our next call will be in February. I believe that's what Rob mentioned at the top of the call, so time does go by pretty fast. So you can look out for the exact date for that in February. We'll have our next All-EN call. John, how you look there?
So I have a couple more questions here. Our first one comes from Amy Wallace, who asks, can you let us know if there's going to be any training in the future for EN's more than one business model, particularly training about the requirements, payment impact for transitions, and what the transition requirements will be?
We don't have a plan for that, but that's something we can certainly think about. But in the meantime, if you have questions, you know, please put that forward to Ian's service, and we will get together and get you an answer on that. I mean, basically, when you have more than one model, let's just assume it's two, you would tell us which tickets you want under which model, and we would move those for you seamlessly.
All right. And then our next question comes from Mary Lynn, who just wanted you to confirm for Indiana University, what's that program called, the specific title?
We would have to get back to you. I don't know it off the top of my head. It's just I know it's the benefits counseling program through Indiana University. Most of the three universities that we approve are the same, you know, kind of requirements. Now, VCU is the one that is under contract with us. So, you know, they're the ones that we promote more. And they are free. I believe the other two will cost the ENs money. But because they're under contract with us, VCU is at no cost to ENs.
All right. And it doesn't look like we have any more specific questions in the queue. And I don't believe we have any in the phone queue. Is that correct?
We do have one now. Would you like to take it?
Please.
Perfect. So the question comes from Hamid Hajibian at H&H Employment. Please go ahead. Caller, your line is open. Please go ahead. Caller, is your line on mute? So another question has come up. Should we skip this one?
Yes, please do.
All right. So the next question is from Sarai Molina at City of Los Angeles.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I had posed a question earlier in the queue. I'm not sure. I was trying to catch up with the conversation or the chats that were coming. My question was really more so around the online training, specifically the introductory web course. I know we can register, but I was wondering if there was any cost associated with those online, that particular online course.
There is not.
Perfect.
Yay.
Okay. Thank you. So I can share the wealth.
And they're very informative. They're, I mean, anybody can take those.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we're just finding resources, short of there not being much money than the budget for actual trainings.
Right.
Resources like these are amazing, and so we'll be sure to share it within our
Yeah, and the training through VCU is free as well, so to become a certified CPWEC. Right, that's what I was saying before.
Okay.
You do the introductory class, and then you can do the training, and if they're in an area that's drivable to you, it's absolutely no expense to your organization.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate the response.
There's one more question from Hamid Hajibian at H&H Employment again. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Can you hear me? I'm sorry. I'm having technical difficulties. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so I wanted to see about the SGA level, the increases there every year for the TWL amount also is increasing, and it seems like ENs are having a hard time catching up, and it really impacts the business, you know what I mean? And the NESA SQA level is 1,260 or 1,280 for 2020. And so I'm wondering what to do in the next few years if it keeps on increasing to 1,500 or more in the future. How are we going to be able to keep up with the business and everything?
This is Patrice. I just want to make sure I understand your question. You're saying how will you be able to keep up with business as an EN if SGA limits continue to increase?
Yeah, that's right, because it keeps increasing every year, and the TWL is also increasing because of the, you know, many clients, you know, are seeing their part-time work, and they want to be able to keep below a certain SGA benefit.
Mm-hmm. Well, the purpose of the Ticket to Work program is to help individuals to earn above SGA. So, I mean, I understand that individuals sometimes are they'd really like to remain below SGA, but we just have to remind them that the purpose of the program is to help them to earn as much money as possible so that they can continue to be self-sufficient, or become and remain self-sufficient. We don't want to the program is not for individuals who want to remain below the trial work level or the SGA levels. We want to make sure that we're encouraging individuals and helping them to find employment that allows them to earn as much
right.
of SGA as possible so that they can continue to be self-sufficient.
Yeah, and that's our problem. You know, the real world is almost 80% deaths who are earning a monthly income, $1,400 or $500 a month, and it's not the same as the hearing clients who are earning two or three times more than that. Because all the deaf clients are about $1,500 a month, between $1,500 and $1,600 before taxes. So that's the gross income. And so for the foreseeable future, SGA levels keep going up. If they go up to $1,500, then that's meeting the same number, and then they won't be needing my services. So there wouldn't be any payment for me in the future in several years.
Well,
wait, this is Kara. Can I ask you, do they not want to go above SGA, or are they not able to go above SGA? Those are two separate things.
Okay, that's a good question. So my clients are earning about $1,350 to $1,500 a month on average. And so it's above SGA. And I get my payments for my services, but I'm just talking about the future. Maybe in 4 or 5 years, if the cost of living keeps going up and the SGA limits also keep rising to maybe $1,400 or so in the future, then this income and also the SGA limit is still going to be below the SGA amount. And the deaf people are, you know, say they like to be below that amount because they keep their benefits going. But it's still really a large amount, and it's under the SGA limit.
Can I ask you, which EN are you with?
I am, I myself am an EN director and the EN.
Right, so which EN are you?
The HH Employment Training for the Deaf.
Okay, and so I understand your point that, you know, SGA, and we don't, our office obviously doesn't determine SGA limits, but, you know, with the cost of living, that does go up, but we would hope that people's salaries also go up with the cost of living increase. Like, we have many persons who are deaf who work for us, you know, and they, you know, their salaries go up as the cost of living goes up. Or anybody, you know, with most organizations, they move up if they so choose to. So it's, do they want
okay.
to stay under SGA to keep their benefits,
okay.
or like Patrice said, do they want to try to become self-sufficient?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just want to give an example if that's okay.
Of course.
So 3 or 4 years ago, the SGA limit was 980 or somewhere around there. 980. And then the deaf people thought that that wasn't enough money, so they were seeking to find a full-time job. And then now in 2019, the SGA limit is $1,220. And so several deaths asked me, they said they wanted to get a part-time job. Mm-hmm. They want to stay under that limit so they can collect benefits because they're already getting a large amount of benefits. And so it's tempting for them to avoid having a full-time job. So I would see that happening again and again.
Right, and I understand that. And this goes back to what Patrice was trying to say, that then, and that's their right to do that if that's what they so choose, but at the same time, it's not the purpose of the program. And I think you would need to explain to them the purpose of the program because you're putting all the effort into training and doing whatever you know you're doing, and then you're not going to
exactly.
get paid moving forward on people if they just want to, you know, stay under the limit to keep collecting their check.
Right. And, you know, what I'm doing during the intake process, the customer comes to me and I explain the rules and policies of being financially independent, and, you know, I try to explain everything to them, and they would rather keep a part-time job and keep their benefits. And I often refer them to vocational rehab, you know, to get some help, and they will help them find a job. But, you know, it has to be full-time. And, you know, part of it's with me, part of it's with vocational rehab. But I'm trying to refer them mostly to them. Yeah.
Well, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to give us this opportunity to help you and chat that. There's probably
yes, thank you. I appreciate you.
No, definitely. It is something that it is understood, and maybe there could be some benefits from some offline chats to see if we can help with that particular situation. But we appreciate you sharing that with us today and bringing that to light.
Yeah, I think you should get in touch with your EN service specialist, and they could guide you through this.
All right. Good suggestion. Thanks for that, Kara.
Yes, I have email contact, and I can talk to the EN supervisor about that as well. Natalia, I believe, is my point of contact in that situation.
Okay.
And Shafiru, I'm not sure how to say her name, Shafira. So I can go ahead and contact them as well and discuss the EN services with both of them from here on
right.
out.
Very
so
good.
Thank you
we
for your help. I appreciate
help
it.
We definitely want to help you to be successful and, of course, to make sure understanding the needs of the beneficiaries and your ticket holders. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And we'll be sure to, no problem, thank you. Are there any other questions by any chance in the queue, Sandy?
Yeah, no, not this time.
Okay, John, do you have any?
Hi, Adele. No questions on my end.
Okay. Well, we've actually reached the end of our call. And we do appreciate everyone chiming in and taking the time to meet with us. As we mentioned before, our next call will be in February. Just be on the lookout for that date. And you have a great rest of the day.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.